Hi, I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News. We'll get to the latest episode of Daily Drive in a minute, but I'm hoping you'll spend a few minutes taking our Daily Drive listener survey. We can't thank you enough for listening and want to know more about you, your listening habits, and any other feedback you may have for the program. The survey will take less than 2 minutes to finish and is completely anonymous. So please, visit autonews.com/DDSurvey and take the survey today. And as always, thank you for listening to Daily Drive.
Daily Drive is brought to you by Reynolds & Reynolds. Want to know how dealerships like yours saw increased profit performance dealership-wide? Visit reyrey.com/KPI to read the Impact on Profitability Study. That's reyrey.com/KPI.
I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News, and this is Daily Drive. It's Tuesday, September 15th. In many ways, John Melashenko is a trailblazer. He craves challenges. He challenges the norm. And he believes that we are at a transformative point in auto retailing. As the chief operating officer of the very forward-thinking Germain Auto Group, when he looks around now, he sees opportunity and challenges everywhere. And that's not only in digital retailing, but in the ability to reassess staffing, consider the talent in his showrooms, and set a course for a model that will not revert back to the former normal. And that's perfectly fine with Melashenko. His group's operations are always analyzing the best way forward, reinventing themselves, and trying to run a better operation. As for the pandemic, virtual transactions and remote deliveries have yielded positive results, including more sales per employee. As Melashenko told us during our virtual retail forum conversation this summer, Germain Automotive was closing stores earlier than ever before, selling more cars with fewer people in less time, and everyone was winning. Germain Automotive Group has dealerships in Ohio, Michigan, and Florida. And we've reached John Melashenko in Columbus, Ohio. Well, John Melashenko, it's always great to hear your voice. How are you?
Nice talking with you, Jason. Good. Everything's really good, actually.
Yeah, you know, you were telling me off air just before we started recording that they would have probably put you in an insane asylum had you said 4 months ago how the following 4 months were going to go. Crazy times, John.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the same business, but it's a different business. If that makes sense.
It's, yeah.
How we generate revenue and how we make money. And, you know, a lot of belief systems we had about what were standards, you know, have all sort of been blown out of the water, you know, primarily due to the changes that evolved out of, you know, COVID and the shutdowns and changes in consumer behavior. So it's a very different business model than we've experienced in the past.
So let's dig into that a little bit. What would you have? Let's go back to February. And knowing, you didn't know what was going to happen, but when it happened,
right.
How did you think sales would play out? Everybody talks about the 2008-2009 playbook, yeah. Or at least that crisis point, but what was your expectation? And then when did that start to really shift?
You know, ironically, I met with our director in Florida in February, and I said, you know, there's going to be a correction at some point. We should probably sit down and develop our, you know, jokingly, our doomsday scenario, right? Mm. And obviously, 08 is really the only reference point we have for that. You know, we weren't prepared then, and we were late to respond. So the big thing was, if something happens, we want to be able to respond quickly. And, you know, the things that we did, we had already sort of scripted out. And that was, you know, if the market slows down, you know, what are those essential positions? Where do we have to make changes, right? If we have to furlough people, or we have to, as we got into the situation where, you know, they shut down our variable operations. So we furloughed 60% of our workforce, 615 people in Ohio and Michigan because of shutdowns in variable in Ohio. So that was a fairly dramatic, and as it turns out, a significant, you know, impact on our business. We left behind a skeleton crew of managers to manage leads and calls, but we had no idea what that level of business would be. We also turned pretty much everything off. I mean, while a lot of our vendor partners, third-party lead providers, you know, digital partners, offered subsidies or reduced rates in some cases, we just turned everything off because we really weren't sure what to expect. So every system
was turned off, or most.
You know, more or less. I mean, we had a vendor cut list. We went through everybody, and we tried to have this discussion, you know, of what's essential. And when you're confronted with something you've never seen before, and we really didn't know whether there what the level of business would be. So we took a very, you know, we sent everybody home and we turned everything off. And whether that was the right thing or the wrong thing to do, we felt like it would be easy to turn things back on and bring people back as business warranted. But that was a big first step.
And then what was it that really pivoted, let's say, midway through the last 6 months?
Well,
we know about the consumer, obviously, and we know about you know, digital retailing. But what was it that really turned it into what you're feeling today?
Okay. Well, I think, first of all, in leaving, you know, the general manager and two sales managers behind, we had, you know, our most experienced and most autonomous and arguably our most talented people at the store. And, you know, their job was to manage leads and calls. Well, pretty quickly, even in April, right, the level of business was more resilient than we thought it was going to be. I mean, it wasn't great. It sort of bottomed out, but then it started to climb. And, you know, our mantra was, you know, we'll bring back people as business warrants. And what we discovered is in a virtual world, right, where people did not necessarily want to come in and they wanted to do more of the transaction virtually, that dynamic, along with the fact that we were able to spread the business out, people didn't want to be in a crowded environment. So if they did come in for delivery, right, they wanted to be alone and they didn't want to be there for very long. So those two things, the shift to virtual and sort of what we call pacing and spacing, being able to spread the business out, it allowed a smaller number of people to transact. The transaction was faster. It was quicker. We were negotiating and appraising cars, you know, virtually. So there was a complete shift in productivity, you know, levels of productivity, you know, that we had never seen before. We were able to transact and complete transactions with much fewer people, much faster. The customers were happier. And in many cases, the grosses were better because we had better people doing the work. So we call it fewer but better. So there were fewer people, but they were amongst our most talented people. And we were driving more business through, quite honestly, people that weren't always involved in the transaction, but were arguably the best in the store at it. So moving them to the front of the process, really, that was, you know, that's where everything started to change.
That's kind of the model of lean and the model of efficiency, isn't it, for a retailer?
Well, I mean, it is now. It's you know, we're now, you know, we've had 3 months that, you know, are amongst the best we've ever experienced, not from a volume perspective, but from a profitability perspective. And it's generated by, you know, incredible increases in productivity. I mean, our gross per employee, if you want to use that, net to sales, net per vehicle, all of that is at levels that so far exceed any benchmarks that we've ever had, that we would have never, like when I say we would have never forecasted it, in some cases it's a, we've doubled our level of productivity and efficiency by having fewer but better people and being able to, again, even in the case of where we close earlier, we sell cars throughout the day and throughout the week. So we're much more efficient with our workflow as opposed to these peak periods of activity in the evenings and the weekends, which quite honestly, we were creating a lot of that because we would ask the customer, when do you want to come in? And they would all want to come in the evenings or on the weekends. Now we say, how's Tuesday at 11?
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, how's Thursday at 4? And, you know, in most cases, because people are working from home more or their priority is to be not in a crowded environment, and to get it in and out quickly. And we actually have a much higher level of managers and salespeople to customer in those situations. So they're very willing to adapt to an appointment that we set as opposed to them dictating it. And that's that pacing and spacing, as we call it, has is also a major factor in why we can sell a lot more cars with fewer people. But yeah. The fact that they're better also seems to really be influencing our gross, our conversion rate, and ultimately our profitability.
It's revolutionary then. I mean, you've completely flipped the relationship between the customer and the dealer.
Well, the only reason we did it by being open-minded and adaptable, right? We moved in the direction that the customer wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we were willing to let go of everything we knew, right? We just said, you know, how do you want to buy the car, right? Here's what we can do. And so we co-created the transaction with the customer. And along the way, we learned because the salespeople, everybody was winning. I mean, the customer was winning. It was 70% from home. It was easier. It was one visit. It was a shorter visit. I mean, they did it to be safe, and they walked away from it going, that was the best experience I've ever had. I want to do that again. So that's when we said, well, you know, let's keep going with this. And, you know, the salespeople, we're selling, we have a 40% increase, and we're at 17 sales per salesperson, up from 12.
Hmm.
So a 40% bump.
Mm-hmm.
Salespeople are selling more cars. They're making more money. And you know, they're not working longer hours. They're just more productive within the day. And you know, so far so good. Associates are winning, customers winning, and you know, obviously the business is winning because of the efficiency.
Yeah. I was going to say, that sounds like about as best case scenario as you can get coming out of a pandemic, or being in a pandemic rather.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's some, you know, we made some good decisions that turned out, you know, to work out. But again, I think we tend to be pretty adaptable, or we try, because we're in a dynamic environment even before COVID. But now it's like, you know, it's sometimes it's week to week, month to month, where there's real changes in the marketplace and wholesale values and consumer confidence, you know, and all sorts of things. So we have to sort of stay, you know, monitoring things and not get, you know, too set in anything. But that's, you know, we're 3 months into it. We're trying to figure out what will remain of what's changed and what's sustainable. And, you know, so far we put together 3 months where we've been able to maintain the efficiency and the productivity levels that, you know, that drive that improved return.
I know most retailers look at every week, perhaps sometimes every day, but certainly every month, for performance. How does this start shaping your view of what the next 6 months might look like, even in terms of your structure or facilities or anything related to that?
Yeah. I mean, again, the big discussion has been how much of this is us and how much of this is market, right? How much of this are adaptations that we've made in process and people, right? And how much is market driven? We believe there's more of it's about us than it is the market. Because again, it's still not a great market. And the ironic thing is that we're generating a lot more money, or a lot more revenue, and making a lot more money, because we've reduced our expenses significantly.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. our selling expenses are, way down. And so that's, you know, and that's what we're trying to see. Can we sustain that? Theoretically, right? If you continue to do more business virtually, which is more efficient and faster, and you continue to be able to spread the business out throughout the day and week, there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to maintain this level of productivity. You know, grosses may ebb and flow, and also values will change. And, you know, but you know, this is not an especially strong market we're in, right? Relatively speaking, relative to anything we've known historically, or at least in the last 5 or 6 years, right? So that's mm-hmm. It's not the strength of the market that's driving the profitability. It's a different model. So we think things will continue to be, you know, volatile through the end of the year. We're trying very hard not to be comfortable. We do monitor things every day and every week. And as there are fluctuations in traffic or activity, you know, we try to figure out what's behind it and make adjustments. But, you know, we're carrying a lot fewer vehicles, used and new. You know, the turn's a lot more efficient. Our floor plan expenses way down. There's a lot of changes. So, you know,
all at the same time.
Yeah. So, all at the same time. But that, again, I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows. But I'm willing to move in the direction that the market moves. So the key is to stay very, very, very connected to levels of traffic and what's going on in the market, and then being willing to, you know, make adjustments. And we've got a team that's sort of oriented to do that. And we talk about it, you know, constantly. The other nice thing is we have, you know, we have stores in Ann Arbor, we have stores in Columbus, we have stores in Naples, Florida, we have luxury brands, import, domestic. So we cover the full gamut. And what's been interesting is all these dynamics have been consistent. So regardless of luxury, regardless of domestic or import, regardless of whether it's Southwest Florida in an affluent market or whether it's Dayton, Ohio, we've seen these dynamics be consistent. So, you know, that's the other nice thing is we have a unique viewpoint. It's not just one franchise or one market or one unique situation. It seems to be pretty broad.
Since you represent so many different segments in that way, tell us a little bit about luxury versus volume versus affluent versus non-affluent. Where are the greater opportunities and where are there some concerns? Because I know luxury was early stages of the pandemic was suffering.
Yeah, you know, there was a we're fortunate in Naples, Florida, right? It's a
right.
We have a BMW and a Naples and a Lexus store along with a Honda store. It's a very fluid market. Ironically, you know, that's a seasonal market. A lot of people leave in the summer and, you know, come in November and stay through April or May. A lot of people stayed because, you know, Southwest Florida, Collier County, the caseloads were relatively small. And a lot of those folks lived in Ohio, Michigan, and maybe even New York in some cases. They decided to stay. So we benefited there. Our luxury stores in Ohio and Michigan, you know, have not struggled. You know, that market's remained again somewhat insulated. We did see a lot of we saw a significant slowdown in used car business in August, right?
Yep.
And I think it was December of 2018 is the last time that we sold more new cars than used, because we have a very strong used car operation. We run around 1.2 to 1 on the norm. In August, for the first time in a year and a half, we sold more new than used. And there was a significant drop off from July to August. Why? As it turns out, we think there were three reasons, right? And subsidies went away July 31st. And we saw an immediate impact in some markets, especially in the used market, especially in the domestic and volume stores. You know, I saw our used car business and even lower price points really start to elevate when the subsidies hit. Subsidies went away. We saw that business soften. Wholesale values have been very high and getting sort of close to new. So that may have had an impact. And, you know, back to school was unlike any other back to school historically. So there was a tremendous amount of distraction. Service business slowed a bit. So that's one of those things where in August, June and July had been really pretty consistent daily selling rate, flow of business. There were some adjustments in August. We still sold cars, but it wasn't in the same mix, and we saw traffic start to slow in service a bit. So that's that dynamic aspect, you know. And they were, you know, some stores were affected differently, you know, by the subsidy piece, and that's our opinion.
Sure. How has the conversation with the factory changed at all in the last 6 months?
We have so many go-to meetings and webinars. It's like my GM's joke about it, right? Because nobody's in the store.
Right.
So there are real, you know, when you got everybody trying to do a go-to meeting at the same time, right? We are overwhelmed. And at some point, while, you know, there's real advantages to virtual, you know, meetings and communication, and we're all adapting, you know, I don't know that our communication has been, you know, as personalized. So I think there's been less of it.
How about the nature of it?
Yeah, I mean, the OEMs are obviously going through their own, you know, struggle and, you know, production and, you know, forecasting and that's a very, you know, haven't been on that side of things. I mean, that's a tougher environment to be in, and we're all going through it together, but we're going through it separately because their experience is very different than ours. And our business is changing. I mean, you know, in significant ways. I don't think we've communicated, you know, as well as maybe we will in the future. And we definitely need to. I think the OEMs need to hear what's changing for us at the retail level. And, you know, we need to hear from them too, and on you know, how we can support them, because it works best when it's a collaborative partnership. It's not always that way with every manufacturer. Some are better than others, but I think it's going to be more important than ever that we work together on, you know, whether it's facilities or whether it's, you know, the nature of how we're transacting or even supply. All of those things are going to be, you know, I think the rules have changed a bit and we all need to be on the same page about what's different.
Final thing, are we all a little smarter now than we were before, or did we just, or are we smarter in a different way?
Yeah. I mean, we're also different, right?
Right.
I mean,
we're different.
We tend to be naturally curious. And I mean, I do. I mean, I still am fascinated, and I really enjoy these challenging times, because they, you know, they test your creativity and your problem solving ability and your organization's adaptability, which is something that we've always oriented ourselves towards. But like most, you know, it probably scares a lot of people, right? You know, I think a lot of people, natural tendency is want to get back to your comfort zone and bring your people back, get back to the way things were, right? Everybody wants to normalize. Everybody's so tired of all of this. And there is a part of us that just wishes things would go back to the way they are. There's that natural tendency. But I think the response is as different as, you know, the individuals involved and everybody, you know, everybody's at a different stage of their life and their career. And, you know, that all influences ultimately the decision we make.
Yeah, everybody's, you know, the frequent phrase is all around what normal is, and whether it's new or old or wanting to get back to what normal was. But the truth it'll never be back to what it was, because we're all changing now, and we will be changed. Yeah,
I think you got to just embrace that, right? As hard as that is, and there's a lot of stuff we're doing that's counterintuitive, Jason. I mean, it's there is no reference point for this. Historical reference points, be they benchmarks or performance, are not relevant anymore. You know, because there have been significant changes in the way the consumers are transacting and how they feel and what they want, right? So. And we are all pretty conditioned, you know, we've all been doing this a long time. So you really got to, you know, what you know can be your greatest liability in this case. So you got to be careful to look at everything with a fresh set of eyes.
That's great. What an insightful talk. Thank you so much, John. It's great catching up with you, and very much appreciate your time, and best of luck, best of health to everybody on your team.
Appreciate that. Always my pleasure.
We reached John Melashenko in Columbus, Ohio. And that's Daily Drive for Tuesday, September 15th. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And for a library of more than 100 interviews, go to autonews.com/dailydrive. We'll be back Wednesday. And now, a word from our sponsor.
In today's automotive market, maximizing existing profit centers and creating new ones is more than a savvy move. It's the biggest factor in getting the most out of every customer opportunity. What would it mean to improve your profit performance in every area of your dealership? More customer pay ROs, more finance gross from new and used vehicles, fewer write-offs in service, reduced time required to complete a deal. The key to all of that, and more, is giving your employees the freedom to drive revenue. Time they spend focused on manual processes is time that can, and should, be used in more profitable ways. When this happens, processes are redefined, employees are empowered, and attention can be turned back to the customer. It all adds up to your dealership becoming the best version of itself. The big question is, how much more do you stand to make? How would a 44.3% increase in service department gross affect you? What about a 25.7% increase in combined gross per new vehicle sold? Those aren't theoretical figures. They are real key performance indicators from a 3-year study of dealerships who gave their employees that freedom to do more with their time. With the right tools behind your revenue drivers, you'll see improved profit performance too. To see more key performance indicators from real dealerships like yours, visit rayray.com/KPI and read the full Impact on Profitability report. That's reyrey.com/KPI.